So IG, if I want a certain average input current with anything where my input current is discontinuous, the buck, how I'm going to get that is I'm going to have something up here and then zero for some amount of time, right? For a DAB, I'm going to have something like this. If it's right at that, V over VG is equal to N. And that's really how I'm getting those lower current stresses, is that I've got a near continuous current, pretty much flat. I'm almost just pulling the DC current. If I make that phase shift and my ZBS interval is very small, I approach the point where IG is just IG, Iout is just Iout. Everything has only the current stresses it needs to support the power that you're trying to flow. We didn't directly cover the sizing of this input capacitor. I left that to you guys. This 10 ohm resistor is a large impedance on the source. At whatever switching frequency you choose, a relatively small capacitor is going to be a significantly lower impedance. You can go through and do the exact calculations. Perhaps an easier thing to do is to say, except that DC, the source is just some high impedance. It's not even there. So all of my input current is going to flow through that input capacitor. And then I can just size it based on the voltage ripple I'm willing to allow at the input. Right? Let's assume that waveform goes through the cap, calculate C that'll limit my voltage ripple. Right? Some very small portion of it will go back through the 10 ohm resistor, but 10 ohms is going to be a lot bigger than your 1 over SC at the switching frequency and above. Okay. All right. People feel ready to make a selection and do a full design?
So, the technology that we use for the requirement that we patent covered in the past, we could not get him to do yet. And that was
something
interesting that
you found.
It was a sepic-fed buck.
Sepic-fed buck.
Yeah. And
this is where the output was parallel with the output part of the
sepic
and the output part of the buck. Okay.
I'd have to look at that.
Oh, yeah, I didn't expect you to be able to do that. Make L three times C out. Not quite that level of master of power electronics, I guess. One thing we haven't talked about much is auxiliary soft switching circuits, and that could be an option if you find a topology that you really love but cannot get it to ZVS. It's great otherwise. You can add some circuitry around it to force it to ZVS. Got a slide that this will play well on next, but general idea, let's say I have some kind of half bridge and this goes off into my converter. I'm switching these devices and I find that either for all my operation or for select operating points, I just can't get this to ZBS. Okay. What does that mean? It means really whatever current I have here, so we'll call I switch from my node Z switch, is either the wrong polarity or insufficient in magnitude to get me zero voltage switching at the instant when Q1 turns off, at the instant when Q2 turns off. So I can come up with a number of circuits where I add a shunt branch, which would really look like, ideally, some pulsating current source that would give me a pulse of current of the correct polarity and magnitude to overcome whatever's going on here and get me soft switching. Okay. So how deep we go into this. The switch, I want to have ZVS here, ZVS here. So I've got high side device on, I shut it off. To get ZVS, what I want is a current that's pulling V switch down, which would be to say I want a pulse of current coming out. So as I've drawn it, what I would really want is some pulse of current here. This is I pulse. On this one, when I turn the low side device off, what I want is a pulse going back in to bring the voltage up. That would be negative as I've drawn this arrow. So it'd be something like this. Treating this in an idealized manner. Now, there's a lot of different ways I can achieve this. One might be to just put an inductor here, call this LOX, back to some kind of circuit that's going to balance my DC. Right? So maybe, you know, a big cap, and then I run it back to VDC, something that's going to prevent any DC current from flowing back in that branch. But if I did this, I could design an auxiliary current, give it another color here, IOX, that did something like this. Big cap just to block DC, it's really going to look like this voltage applied across an inductor. That'll give me this triangular current, which is in the correct polarity to help me with ZVS. That's the trade-off. Now, this triangular current is always there. So the common case is I'm using the DAB and I lose ZVS at light load. So I want to add in some additional current to give me ZVS at light load. The trade-off is at heavy loads, that current's still there, still same magnitude. You're going to have a baseline of the conduction losses associated with this current. How to realize this? There are a lot of different ways. It's dependent on the topology and what you're trying to get out of it. You can do it with more active switches that allow you some level of control to change the magnitude of this current. You can do it with purely passives and size them, something that you're willing to deal with the trade-offs and conduction losses. But for every topology, it'll be different where your options are to connect that. But the general idea is just this. I want to find some way, if my base load is not going to give me ZVS, to inject enough current to get that ZVS back. If you had a question? Yeah. One common option would be, here's my main power switches. This is my power stage. And what I'm really going to build is a buck boost converter. And if you remember from the homework, design this buck boost converter by having a phase shift between the switching of these two bridges, I got this triangular current. And if I also duty cycle control it, I can get a trapezoidal current that has controlled height to it. So I can adjust, let this same IOX can look like this, or can look like this, or if I switch them purely in phase, can be zero. Okay. Aux. Okay. That gives me some level of control. This is one implementation of what's called an auxiliary resonant commutative pole, ARCPE circuit. The idea is I've got these big power stage sets, and then I can, with potentially much smaller auxiliary sets, because they don't need to carry the full current of my converter, they're only carrying whatever current I need for ZVS, supplement in a controlled way the current going into them and paying ZVS. The trade-off with this one is these are potentially smaller sets. By smaller, I mean physically smaller. They can be higher RDS on. They're not carrying the full current. They don't have full conduction losses. They're only carrying this current. The trade-off is these need to always be switched. You can never just shut them off, because if you do, their output capacitance is going to form a resonant circuit. You're going to get ringing going out here. So even at same kind of deal, at light load, you want to switch them, get a lot of current. You go up to heavy load where you would have gotten ZVS anyway. You want to regulate to zero, but you need to keep switching them. If you go to zero, then they're going to be hard switched. There's zero current here. Okay. As with all things, there's no free lunch. Well, I've got that drawn, leads to another option specific to converters with full bridges in them, things like these AC link converters, DAB that we've looked at, SRC that we've looked at. Putting just an inductor across their two switch nodes gives me a triangle wave of current of the correct polarity to help me ZVS everything. So with the DAB, one option is just to add an inductor across my primary bridge, add an inductor across my secondary bridge. Both of those will help me obtain ZVS. That inductor, we mentioned previously, it's effectively in parallel with the magnetizing inductance. We mentioned briefly, you could reduce your magnetizing inductance to help you with ZVS. Could also add an extra inductor just across the switch node on the DAB, primary bridge, secondary bridge, with same trade-offs. More conduction losses, less switching losses, potentially. Yeah. Generally parasitic. So with things like the DAB, you're trying to incorporate that leakage into the operation, right? You've got the series inductor with the transformer. In general, very difficult to design that leakage element, because that depends heavily on the geometry of your winding, the permeability of your core, how you put everything together. That generally leads you down the path of finite element analysis. There's some empirical formulas out there for cylindrical coil, some permeability. This is approximately what you'll get in terms of leakage. For the magnetizing, or for the flyback, it's purely a parasitic, right? You just want to minimize it. The DAB, it'd be nice to be able to design to a specified value so you don't have to put an external inductor supplement. Most often, if you want your transformer to be a good transformer, you're trying to minimize that leakage. And then for the DAB, you might add a little bit of external to bring up whatever value you get to the value you design. The numbers in the homework are empirical in nature. Generally, a well-designed transformer can have a couple percent ratio leakage to magnetizing. It's a little bit perhaps less true for a flyback type transformer where it's intentionally gapped, because, and it depends on how you design it, but a huge gap, it's going to be one-to-one leakage to magnetizing. But no simple way to say, oh yeah, if it's a ferrite E-core, it's going to be 1.5%. It really depends on exactly how you wind it. Other questions? It's going to lose VVF on at least one bridge as power goes to zero. Okay. If the input and output voltages are matched in the way that we described in class, V out is equal to NVG, you're going to lose VVF everywhere. You're going to have to switch at the exact same time to bring that current down to zero. If you design it off of that point, V out is not equal to NVG. It's either a little bit greater or a little bit less. What you can get is really a similar effect in the way that we mentioned at the end of class last time. If the conversion ratio isn't matched, there's this ramping distortion of the current waveforms. And if V out is a little bit high, it'll push things in a direction that move you towards VVF of the secondary, creating a triangle wave with zero average, so you still have zero output power for some just circulating current. If the out is a little low, it'll push that current back to the primary. And it really just depends on where the peaks are. So if you go high, you're going to have a positive peak at the time where the primary, or the time where the secondary bridge switches. If you go low, you'll have a positive peak at the time where the primary bridge switches. So, for example, if you wanted to go DAB and you wanted to have ZVS everywhere, I could design my V out a little bit larger than N times VG. That would help me get ZVS on the secondary, and then I could add in an inductor on the primary to help me with ZVS there, design that to get ZVS across the full range. Trade-off is, like I said, at full load, you're going to have this extra circulating current, just make losses a little bit higher than they would have been if you had V out is equal to NVG. And also, if you keep the same conversion ratio, you'll have a little bit of circulating current there. Does that make sense? All. Yeah, of course. All the ones that will be there. So there needs to be some decision there of what you're going to do at zero load. Right? If you're just letting the phase shift drop to zero and using the transformer turns ratio, then you're going to need to include hard switching losses on all eight sets if you're normal DAB, two full bridges. At least you'll find that experimentally that's going to be a very hard operating point to hit, because if your timing isn't exactly perfect and the secondary doesn't match the primary in its switching times, then you're going to develop some current, and it's going to be hard to keep that at zero current without doing a control loop, and a control loop isn't part of what I'm asking you to do. So it's going to require a whole lot of hand-tuning of timing. Maybe possible. Another question?
Our goal is to achieve the highest power density.
Depends on what you mean by first. I'd say that the last goal is power density, right? Because there's a set of requirements that are, you have to meet this to get in, right? And then power density, subject to hitting all of these goals, power density is the one thing that you want to maximize, right?
If we can have a power density through 100, having an efficiency of 95, we can also build a power density like 100.
You have to meet that threshold on efficiency, which is a weighted efficiency across the whole range. You could, you know, probably give me, so that's 95%, right? The 10 TPE efficiency. I'm sure you could come up with some that's 98% TPE and much bigger. Okay? Don't go that direction. Might be interesting for validity to that design. And for this competition, I said power density, that's the direction you're going. If you're out there designing for a real world application, it would depend on the value of size versus the value of power losses. If it's in a space constrained application, they'll prefer high power density. If it's in a unspace constraint where the cost of energy is the driving factor, you want the high efficiency. Here we've talked about electric vehicles, data centers. Those are both applications where size is very important. Yeah. I heard murmurings at the start of class. He said, no, there's no homework this week, so I'm going to take off and I'm going to relax. So it sounds like I need to not do that again. I don't want to give you time to focus on that. My plan is to have a homework due this Friday, and every Friday I'm going to feel out what I hear from you guys for the remainder of the semester and try to not overstress you, give you time to work on this. There will be still homeworks. There will still be a midterm exam. But like I said, I'm going to do what I can, gauging the effort that you guys are putting in on the design competition and your loads to make sure that it's not asking you to do double work, that we're being fair about that. So it's going to be a combination of what we've covered in class since the last homework and what's currently going on in the design competition. I'm not committing to no homeworks other than this week, but I am going to try to be conscientious of that. Always welcome feedback if you guys want to let me know. You're really stressed about this and you're putting in a lot of effort. Other questions? Good. Always welcome feedback on this. This is the first time we've tried this design competition. So far, I'm liking it. Seems it's leading people to think about things in ways that you might have just overlooked without having to go through the process. But let me know how you feel about it as the semester goes, and what we can do to make sure it's a good experience and that you're learning and getting something of value out of it.
It seems like it would be almost more beneficial to have more time, kind of like a 482 type thing.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of my choice in what topology to design was honestly what's easiest. Mm. I'm thinking more about workload at this point. That, does that make sense?
Yeah. You already got one homework off. There were 2 weeks with one homework and one of these.
I was just saying what I felt was more of a driving factor in my choice at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's a good point. A couple of things on that, one is there's a trade-off, right? Because things like this, even now, we haven't covered enough in this course to have talked about everything that's going to go into this design, right? But from that sense, I want to push it later. In the sense of making sure you have enough time to actually get it done reasonably, I want to push it earlier. So there's some kind of optimum there. Maybe it needs to go one way or the other. The other thing is, many of you probably know, so tiny box challenge related to this little box challenge that we competed in a year ago. And that is the case on these kinds of challenges, right? So this research project, we entered Google's little box challenge. What we ended up choosing for a topology was not the one we predicted to be best, but the one we predicted to be pretty good and possible to build in the time frame. And that's the case in real designs, right? If you're working for a company and they say, you know, we need this converter to be on next year's electric vehicle. Okay. Maybe this exotic double resonant, multi-resonant converter that I had in mind that seems really cool and really efficient isn't going to happen for next year's vehicle. So there is a trade-off there. Hopefully, even if you don't get to choose the most exciting topology, there is still enough time to gain what you would have gained from that, going through the analysis, understanding the trade-offs between these different topologies. And I agree, part of your selection should keep in mind practicality. Now, we try to ease that by saying, look, you don't need to control it. You don't need to worry about gate drives and things that, well, you need gate drives, but we'll give some isolated supplies and don't worry about the size of those and implementing all that. Just focus on the core power stage. But still, you came up with something with 16 different FETs and multi-levels and series parallel of 8 different power stages. That's going to be rough by the end of the semester. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Well, we'll see where we get on what I had planned. Looks like most of this will get pushed into Wednesday. So we were talking in the last couple classes about this DAB, which was one of these AC link topologies. And we had some comments on the difference between the DAB and the series resonant converter. Really, circuit schematic wise, the same thing, but a reduction in the series resonant capacitor to cause the converter to behave in a resonant manner. This is a very small portion of this class of AC link topologies. And I can start looking at a parallel resonant converter where my capacitance is shunt instead of series. We start looking at an LCC, an inductor and two capacitors, an LLC, two inductors and a capacitor, all different tank configurations with transformer, without transformer. Generally, I can go through most of those and do state plane analysis. Depends on whether I'm truly multi-resonant or whether one of my elements is more or less linear. Resonant frequencies differ, but state plane analysis is going to be, you know, my most accurate way to solve a lot of these. That being said, for quick comparisons of what's the trade-off between a series resonant and a parallel resonant and an LCC and an LLC, state plane analysis is not the most useful tool to quickly glance at them and figure out how are each of these going to operate, right? It requires some amount of time spent solving through the equations. So what we're going to do next is cover the sinusoidal approximation, where I'm really only going to look at the fundamental component of my waveforms and reduce everything down to a simple linear circuit that allows me to gain some insight about the behavior of these. Before I do that, I want to talk a little bit, and honestly what I was going to talk about here I covered a lot of in the questions earlier, but about just generally what I want for ZVS of a half bridge. Okay. So I'm going to do this by, to neglect the need for this DC blocking, what I'm going to do is split my DC bus into two. It's going to be VG over two, VG over two. So that this node is right in the middle of the DC bus. And then I'm going to look at the switch and I switch from before and imagine that I can model what this is connected to as some equivalent impedance connected back to this point where I'll have really zero average voltage if I put some square wave here. Let's not worry about this. It's my mistake on this schematic and call this ground. And if I look at the switch, it's going to look something like this, assuming I get ZVS. This is time. And to get me this ZVS, what I want out of this current I switch, as we were just saying, is really I want something up here, something down here, right? I want positive current at this point, my switch that'll pull out of my switch node and bring the voltage down, negative current pushing back into it to bring the voltage up, push it where it needs to be so I can obtain ZVS. The rest of the time, as far as ZVS, I don't so much care what the waveform is, right? So if I have these correct polarities, I don't care whether it's triangle wave or some sinusoid. What I want is the polarity to be here. So what I want to look at is, what does that say about my equivalent load? Okay, assuming it's just some passive load. Okay, I don't have any active things. It's just some combination of L's and C's and R's. Okay. Looking at my current and voltage, I've got two AC waveforms, and not worrying too much about the wave shape of each, what I've got is I switch is phase shifted with respect to V switch, right? What I want is, say I define some midpoint here, some midpoint here. I want some positive phase voltage to current, so that my current is as a wave shape lagging behind my voltage in order to get me that zero voltage switching. All right. So my C is, in some sense, the phase of this voltage waveform minus the phase of this current waveform, right? Which, if I care really only about the fundamental component, that's equal to the phase of this load, right? I'm really just looking at the switching frequency. It's this load impedance, and what its phase is around the switching frequency, that's going to determine whether my current is leading or lagging, right? And what do I want out of this? Well, as we were just showing, what I really want is my current to be trailing my voltage, maybe some positive phase that looks like an inductor, right? Makes some sense. In this voltage source inverter, I want my phase to look more inductive than capacitive. I make it capacitive, effectively just adding more parallel capacitance to the switch node. It's going to cause me not only to hard switch, but it's going to increase my hard switching losses because I've got parallel capacitance. If I make the load inductive, it's going to supply current back in. It's going to help me to ZVS. So general truth, I want inductive loading. For ZVS of voltage source inverter, ESI, which just means that I'm running some inverter with a DC voltage across it, using that to generate an AC voltage. My input looks like a DC voltage, not a DC current. Current source inverter is another option that perform generally not as well at high frequency. I won't cover them in detail. But for something like this, I've got two devices, the DC voltage across them. I'd like that load to be inductive. Okay. And this is going to form one of the principles when we look at the sinusoidal analysis of how we figure out where we can operating, where we can operate and have the potential for DVFs. Now, inductive loading is not sufficient for DVFs. I know if this thing looks capacitive, I'm not going to get DVFs. There's no way. If it looks inductive, I have the potential for it. But we've looked at CCM bucks, they hard switch. We've looked at the DAB, and at light load, it starts hard switching. So just figuring out whether this is inductive isn't going to tell me if I get soft switching or not. It's just going to tell me whether I've got the possibility. Okay. So I want inductive loading. Okay. Sinusoidal analysis then is going to simplify looking at these AC link topologies by considering only the fundamental component of all the waveforms in that middle AC section. Okay. And this is covered in chapter 19 of the Erickson and Maksimovich text. We'll follow largely the process there. We'll change notation a little bit because we're going to go a little bit beyond what's in the text. So the idea behind sinusoidal analysis is when I look at this V switch waveform, I've got some square wave, and that has a spectrum that looks like this. If I am then applying this waveform to a resonant tank with a resonant frequency very close to the fundamental component, then I'm going to take this voltage, I'm going to apply it to a impedance that maybe looks something like this. This is magnitude of EQ. Then the resulting current in the tank, I switch spectrum, is going to be V over Z. What I'm going to get is a very low impedance, this FS, to result in a large component here. And then everything else is going to see a high impedance. And the harmonics are going to be attenuated by the tank. And what I'm left with is going to be inside this tank, really just the fundamental component, just the waveform at the switching frequency. Okay. So if this is true, then I can model the converter by looking only at the fundamental. And that's the basis of the sinusoidal analysis, is I'm going to consider only sinusoids at the switching frequency, which is going to reduce the circuit down to some basically phasor equivalent circuit where I have a single frequency through all of my AC tanks, and I can just look at impedances and figure out how the circuit's going to respond. I can, if I wanted to be a little bit more accurate, I can extend this by doing phasor analysis at multiple frequencies to figure out what is the 3FS component that makes it through the tank, how does that alter circuit waveforms, so on and so forth. At some point, you get diminishing returns. Like I mentioned earlier, the benefit of this sinusoidal analysis is it's quick and it can gain insight into how a tank is going to operate in a given converter. If you want good accuracy, then neglecting all these harmonics and assuming all the waveforms are purely sinusoidal is not the best approach. go back to something like state plane analysis or simulation, some kind of time domain analysis tools. So a couple of these comments that I've said, and one that kind of demonstrating this. This is a plot taken from the authors of the book that shows a series resonant converter with a diode rectifier. So behaves a little bit different than the synchronous one that we looked at. And it shows normalized switching frequency, F is FS over F naught, versus the voltage conversion ratio when a diode rectifier is used for three different cases. They're labeled a little bit weird. This down here is two lines where Q is equal to 10, two lines where Q is equal to 2, and two lines where Q is equal to 0.5. Okay. And it's comparing the two lines, what they call exact and approximate. Approximate is this sinusoidal analysis where I consider only the fundamental. What they call exact is state plane analysis. So what you see, there's significant error when Q is low, okay? Q of the resonant tank, it's the low Q tank. Something like this. Then there's not such a significant difference between the attenuation at the fundamental and the attenuation at the harmonics. And it's not gonna look like a pure sinusoid. What I've drawn in purple, it would reduce the magnitude of this. These are still there of the same magnitude, but the ratio is going to be much smaller. Okay? And then they get less accurate as F decreases, as I move my resonant frequency further from my switching frequency. For the series resonant converter, we go below 1, so I'm pushing the resonant frequency down. So really, it just looks like an inductive load across all these. Same argument, it's just that inductive load, there's less relative attenuation between the fundamental and the harmonics. So it does pretty good with high Q and with a resonant frequency very close to the switching frequency, falls apart as I go away from that. The Q itself, in most of these topologies, is not just going to be the series resonant, the Q of my LC, but that LC tank is going to be loaded by whatever my output power is. So my effective Q of this resonance is going to change with my loading of the DC to DC converter, how much output power I have. So even if I design a lossless LNC, I'm still going to have problems with Q dropping at different loading conditions. Right? And then this is the comment I was making earlier. Looking at it in this sinusoidal analysis, I can figure out whether my phase between voltage and current is of the right polarity to make DVS possible. But I can't, using this alone, say, I'm going to get DVS. Okay? I know I could, but I might not have enough energy in the inductor during my dead time. I might have waveforms that look like, this is V-switch, you know, only make it so far and then hard switch down. I know that it's going to try. If I've got inductive loading, I'm going to resonate in that direction. But I have to go back to something like state plane analysis to figure out whether I have sufficient energy to reach zero voltage switching. Okay. With that, I've run out of time, so we'll pick up here next time where we're going to take a example AC link converter and analyze only the fundamental component, be able to derive an equivalent circuit at the switching frequency. We'll go through that on Wednesday. Thanks, guys.